Ashcroft.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Maria Baldini-Poterman and I represent Mohammed Noor in this matter. The issue before this court is whether the Board of Immigration Appeals erred as an abuse of discretion in denying petitioner's motion to reconsider the underlying decision. In this case, the Board of Immigration Appeals initially issued an affirmance without opinion, a one-line decision without discussing the rationale for upholding the immigration judge's decision. At the heart of this claim is whether the Board of Immigration Appeals failed to correct the clear legal error of the immigration judge below. On page 6 of the immigration judge's decision, the judge stated that Mr. Noor failed to meet his burden of proof by proving that all members of the Rahawin clan would be persecuted. There is no such requirement to show that every single member of the Rahawin clan must be persecuted in order to win an asylum case or to be granted asylum. HCFR 1208.13b2 subsection 3 specifically says that an applicant for asylum does not need to show that he or she would be singled out if they can demonstrate a pattern or practice of persecution against similarly situated persons in a particular social group. Mr. Noor, as well as another witness, both testified that he is a member of the Rahawin clan from the Baidoa region. This fact was not disputed. In his decision, the immigration judge never mentioned the testimony of Mr. Noor's witness, a man named Abdi Noor, and instead denied the claim. The evidence of the record clearly demonstrates that the Rahawin of the Baidoa region have been targeted for persecution. The Department of State's report, found in the administrative record at pages 376 and 385, state that the Rahawin of Baidoa have been subject to harassment, risk of intimidation, and political pressure to join rival factions, and that members of minority clans are subject to harassment and abuse by armed gunmen of all affiliations. The United Nations report, at administrative record page 515, states that members of minority clans, including the Rahawin, have been subject to measures close to ethnic cleansing in Somalia. In this case, the judge clearly ignored the evidence in the record, and the board failed in the appeal and in the motion to reconsider to consider this critical legal error by the immigration judge in upholding the judge's decision. Secondly, Your Honor, in matter of H, the Board of Immigration Appeals held that membership in a clan can constitute membership in a particular social group, and that one may have a well-founded fear of future persecution based on your membership in the clan. Mr. Noor testified at his hearing that he feared forced future recruitment by rival clans and also persecution on account of the minority clan membership. In order to prove the well-founded fear, Mr. Noor had to subjectively show that he feared persecution. He did so through his testimony. Again, the objective portion is met by the evidence which is in the record in this case. I would also like to address the issue of credibility. Mr. Noor testified at his hearing through a court interpreter for which it was unclear at times what the interpreter was actually stating, and there were some discrepancies that were raised at the hearing. When Mr. Noor initially applied for asylum, he applied 3 weeks after entering the United States. And he did so with the assistance of someone who did not speak English. And that was borne out by our citations to the asylum application itself and the errors in grammar in the application and the statement. On page 14 of our brief, we go through errors where the judge himself can't understand what the interpreter is saying. And there are sections where the interpreter gave answers that were non-responsive to the questions. And those are outlined at pages 14 to 16. One of the critical points in the judge's decision was that whether or not his sister or a cousin had been raped during an attack back in 1992. eventually it came out through the translator that it was really a cousin, not a sister. And so there may have been some confusion regarding the language. The immigration judge also erred as a matter of law under a case called Matter of Pula in deciding whether or not to exercise his discretion to grant Mr. Nur's application for asylum. In Matter of Pula, the board held that the use of a fraudulent document in order to flee a country of persecution is not necessarily deemed to be a negative factor in determining whether to grant an asylum claim. In this case, Mr. Nur did enter on a fraudulent document. However, his intent to apply for asylum was clear because he did so within 3 weeks after entry to the United
States. Can we go back to the credibility finding for a minute? You know, what was the immigration judge's response or reaction to the fact? I mean, you argued before the immigration judge there was a problem with the interpreter.
Your Honor, I was not the underlying
counsel. I'm sorry, well, counsel of record at that point argued there was a problem with the interpretation. Was that argument put forward before the immigration judge?
No, unfortunately, Your Honor, the attorney did not specifically raise that issue. However, the attorney in the Board of Immigration Appeals brief and in the motion to reconsider did raise the issue of credibility before the agency.
And specifically the problem with the interpreter?
Not specifically the problem with the interpreter, Your Honor. However, he did raise the issue of whether or not there was a confusion about whether the respondent's sister or the cousin had been raped, and that was clarified through the testimony at the court hearing itself. And this court, in its recent decision, Georges versus Ashcroft, specifically outlined that where an applicant can provide a reasonable explanation for minor inconsistencies, that this would be deemed not to fail as far as a credibility determination. And this court remanded the case back to the immigration, well, back to the Board of Immigration Appeals for further development on the issue. The government has raised the issue and whether or not Mr. Nur adequately brought a motion to reconsider before the board, and it cites some precedent which requires that there had to be some new evidence presented. The regulations for immigration purposes at 8 CFR 1003.2B1 do not require that new evidence be presented. A motion to reconsider is used to raise legal or factual challenges to issues that the board did not specifically consider in the direct appeal process. In the direct appeal itself, it is difficult to understand what the board actually considered because it issued an affirmance without opinion, a one-liner. And in the motion to reconsider, dated February 14, 2003, the board says we basically considered all these issues the first time and we're not going to revisit them. But in the appeal process, underlying counsel did attach a new report addressing country conditions, which had been issued between the time of the IJ's decision and the time of the Board of Immigration Appeals brief. It's unclear whether the board considered this. The country conditions showed that Somalia remains without a central government, that no clan controls more than a minor geographic region in Somalia. If Mr. Nur is returned to Somalia, he will not be able to relocate safely anywhere within the country as he is from a minority clan and the Baidoa region has been subject to takeovers repeatedly by the Hawiya, one of the main major clans in Somalia. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Isaac Campbell and I represent the Attorney General in this matter. Your Honor, the central issue before this court is whether petitioners demonstrated that the board has abused its discretion in denying the motion to reconsider, and petitioner has not done so, and thus his claim must fail. I think that it's important first that the government's position has been mischaracterized, and so to clarify the government's position, a quick timeline would be helpful before entering into the argument. The immigration judge denied petitioner's claim on March 31st of 2000. The BIA affirmed the immigration judge's denial on December 6, 2002. Petitioner did not choose to file a petition to review before this court and instead filed a motion to reconsider, which was denied on February 14, 2003. Now, the first issue in which petitioner seems to mischaracterize petitioner's issue with respect to new information. It's the government's position that this court first lacks jurisdiction to review this particular motion to reconsider for this reason. Petitioner submitted a brief to the board to appeal the IJ's decision, which is found in the administrative record at pages 31 to 42. The board reviewed the brief submitted for the appeal and ultimately affirmed the immigration judge's decision. Petitioner then sought to have the board reconsider the decision, and it submitted the same brief previously provided to the board, and that can be found in the administrative record pages 7 to 17. Now, the language in the motion to reconsider evidences that it is the same brief. At page 7, it says, as respondent previously stated in his appeal, at a risk of being redundant, the respondent repeats his argument contained in his appeal at page 14. The motion to reconsider was practically a verbatim recitation of the material from the previous brief. And so...
Except for the new country report. Was that attached to it, as she mentioned, and once I got that mixed up?
I'm not certain if the new country report was attached, but even if there was a new country report attached, the argument with the brief was the same that was submitted on appeal, and it didn't make, it was the same argument. So that when the court, in looking at the motion to review, this court stated that it had previously reviewed this information. Now, there is a case, and cited in the brief, Schneider National Incorporation via ICC, which states that an agency decision to deny reconsideration is dispositive as long as the agency makes no alteration in the underlying order, which is not relevant here, or the petition requesting reconsideration is not based upon new evidence or changed circumstances. This type of decision has been traditionally committed to agency discretion and is unreviewable. This court has also addressed this in an unpublished decision, which can't be quoted. However, the case relied upon is a published decision. And in that case, it says, it cited In Re MBA, which is found at 23 INN, DEC 424-481, BIA 2002. And to succeed on the motion for reconsideration, a petitioner would have to convince the BIA to re-examine its original decision dismissing his appeal, and here's a quote, in light of an additional legal argument, an aspect of the case which is overlooked, or intervening change in the law. As stated, the argument and looking at the brief that was submitted to appeal the immigration judge's decision, the affirmance, and was submitted for a motion of reconsideration was virtually the same thing, and so we would argue that it is not subject to this court's review. However, secondly, petitioner also states that with the information required to be reviewed by this court, as stated, petitioner did not seek review of the affirmance, and instead sought review of the motion to reconsider. As such, the standard for review, which petitioner correctly cites, that this court's review is limited to whether the discretion was actually exercised and whether it was exercised in an arbitrary or capricious manner. Now, petitioner has not met his burden in establishing that the board's failure to grant the motion to reconsider was arbitrary and capricious. And in fact, seems to be seeking to do a backdoor approach to seek review of the board's decision, affirming the IJ's decision on September 6, 2002. And this is evidenced by the language in petitioner's opening brief, which references the standard of substantial evidence. And it's looking at petitioner's brief on pages 13, 16, 21, at the conclusion of each of petitioner's arguments, it makes that reference, which is the incorrect standard. Looking at the proper standard of review, petitioner bears the burden of establishing the board acted in arbitrary and capricious manner. Petitioner did not do so in the opening brief, which referenced substantial evidence, as I mentioned earlier. And in petitioner's reply brief, petitioner merely states that the BIA's decision was arbitrary and capricious because it did not properly credit petitioner's testimony and failed to properly consider the evidence, which is found at page 3 of the reply brief.
Her argument that some of these inconsistencies were very minor and therefore should not have, I guess it would be, affected the credibility determination of the immigration judge to the extent that it did, or the explanation, for example, on the sister versus the cousin?
Well, I would say two things. I would say first, Your Honor, is that if petitioner felt that the that the affirmance of the immigration judge's decision was in error, that petitioner should have filed a motion to review, and that this is not the place to submit a backdoor approach. So I would say that procedurally, this court should not even get to that issue because of the procedures that petitioner chose to follow. However, if looking at that in terms of the credibility, the court based its decision on a number of issues, including credibility, and basically the immigration judge found the petitioner had not met his burden. In discussing the issue of credibility, it's important to understand that it was simply one factor among many, and even looking at that issue, it was not as simple as petitioner's counsel suggests. Initially, in the original application, petitioner claimed his sister was raped and she was killed while she was 7 months pregnant. He also provided a listing of his original family members, which did not include a sibling named Asha. Now, it is true that during his testimony, he said that it was his cousin that was raped by the rival clan. When asked about the discrepancy, however, he did claim during the testimony, and not during his application, where there's been this contention that somehow with someone who didn't understand English. During his testimony, he did claim that he, in fact, did have a sister named Asha, but that she was dead, which can be found at the administrative record at 132. When he was reminded that he provided an exhaustive list of his immediate family members in his original application, which did not include his sister, petitioner then reversed course and said, okay, no, that Asha was not a sister, but in fact the sister of his cousin. And so that this was simply, the inconsistency was not limited simply to the asylum application, where it can be said that, well, this was simply someone who didn't understand English who helped me, but, you know, I was forthcoming with this correction. There were even inconsistencies in the testimony. And it was based on more than just the fact that the petitioner was not credible. The immigration judge also found that, in addition to the credibility issues, and there was also some credibility about, he made some contention about his father and land being taken, there was some issue there about the land, and the immigration judge found that that was just one portion of the problems with petitioner's application, with petitioner's application and testimony. Petitioner also, if you look at the State Department country report, which petitioner's counsel has referred to, it refers to the fact that the Rahawin clan align themselves with other clans and that there is clan violence that affects all of the clans. And so the immigration judge found that trying to escape general country conditions of violence does not support the cognizable claim for asylum, simply trying to flee general conditions. The State Department report provides that there are many clans that suffer violence, and inter-clan violence is a situation that occurs throughout the country. The immigration judge also found that petitioner did not merit a discretionary grant of asylum because of the fact that he referred to one particular issue that the only issue that he said involved him personally was that he was recruited into a militia, that he was there for a day, he escaped, he suffered no harm. He lived there for a number of years afterward and had suffered no harm, and in fact said that because he thought that country conditions were going to heat up again, if you will, he wanted to flee. He was there for 4 years and had not suffered any incidents of persecution. The immigration judge referred to that. So the immigration judge looked at the inconsistencies, looked at the State Department reports that found this is general country conditions, looked at the fact that he had not suffered personal persecution, looked at the fact that, and with respect to the ideas in Kenya, and the fact that he was in Kenya, the immigration judge looked at the fact that the petitioner had been there for a number of months. The petitioner also, one portion of the decision was that, or discretionary denial of asylum, and looking at the fact that the petitioner had stayed in Kenya for a number of months. Now, opposing counsel references Matter Pula. I see my time is up, if I may finish this.
Yes, it is. All right, go ahead and finish it for half a minute. Don't toll a few year olds.
Oh, certainly, Your Honor. In the Matter Pula, while it does say that the fact that one uses a fraudulent document is not necessarily dispositive, the conditions in Pula are different than here. In Pula, the individual had attempted to obtain documents, and the record evidence showed the petitioner had done so, consistently tried to do things in a proper manner and was unable to do so, which is not present here. There are also a number of other factors in Pula, in looking at the decision, which would show that it was within the judge's discretion that the judge could have a discretionary denial of asylum and looking at the factors in Pula. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. Wait, how much more time do you have? You have 2 minutes. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Your Honors. With respect to the issue of whether this court has jurisdiction over the denial of the motion to reopen, in the case of Georges, this court clearly outlined the grounds under which it has jurisdiction. First, that the board failed to consider an important claim of an asylum applicant, which is present in this case, or otherwise rendered its decision without a reasonable explanation, which we also submit is present in this case. As far as the issues raised in the motion to reconsider, although they were similar issues to what was raised in the appeal brief, the board did not adequately address them or the evidence. In response to Your Honor's question about whether the country report was submitted with the motion to reconsider, it was actually submitted with the appeal brief, the initial brief that was upheld. There was an affirmance without opinion decision issued in that case. The issue of whether the board abused its discretion goes partially also to another error that the judge committed. The judge found that Mr. Nur belonged to a majority clan. The documentation from the State Department, the United Nations, etc., evidences that Mr. Nur was actually a member of the Rahawin clan, and the Rahawin are a minority clan, not a majority clan. And I see that my time is up. Thank you.
Oh, you've got about half a minute.
Half a minute. Okay. Thanks. As far as the issue of resettlement, the regulations lay out what constitutes firm resettlement. Firm resettlement means that the person has received an offer of permanent residence or resettlement, and that if they resided in another country prior to coming to the United States, they are not barred from asylum if they were there only as a necessary consequence of flight, long enough to arrange travel, and that they develop no significant ties to the country. In this case, Your Honors, we submit that Mr. Nur was temporarily in Kenya in an illegal status, and he did not have any permanent residence or right to remain in Kenya. Therefore, he has not been firmly resettled for purposes of the asylum case.
The question of firm resettlement argued before the board, for the IJ?
It was in the immigration judge referenced briefly that he had been living there. In its opening brief, the government raised the issue whether he had been firmly resettled. The immigration judge raised the issue of internal relocation, and on appeals to the board and in the motion to reconsider it, the issue of internal relocation was addressed.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We take the case under advisement and court adjourned.